Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings and greetings, bring blessings with those who are alive, because we intend to stay alive in Torah Chaim, instructions of life, towards Ches, instructions of kindness, towards Rachim, instructions of mercies. You now tune into Blog Talk Radio, and we humbly assert we're the higher inner frequency. This is Soul Talk number 813, Proverbs, teachings to access wisdom and righteousness, presentation number 30. Blessed is our eternal creator, shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family condition. With the Creator's help, our next broadcast will begin right now on March 31st, at 11 a.m. It's now, actually, 11:01 a.m., live from Turtle Island, equals a.k.a. the USA, equals Unified Soul Actualization. An essential topic of discussion will be sharing the oral and written Torah traditions according to King Solomon's Proverbs, one of the most powerful teachings from the Israelite Tanakh, Torah, Prophets, Holy Writings. Our caller number is 563-999-3688. That's 563-999-3688. Meanwhile, may the eternal creator bless and protect you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. We're listening to Yosef Kadorner, a fine human being living in the Holy Land of Israel, seeing how the creator lived and will always live above all. And one day, he and his name will be one. What does that mean, the creator's name will be one? Meaning, it will be the oneness, the power of the recital of the Creator's name be associated with the oneness of creation, meaning that if nothing is separate, not one molecule, not one nation, not one growth on the other side of this world, because we're in the western part of the world, someplace in South Africa, someplace in Australia, someplace in New Zealand, someplace in the depths of China and the valleys of Russia, the Creator is running everything. This is, again, the singer is talking about the Creator rules on the entire world. And on that day, he will be one and his name will be one. We're going to let this song run out for the next minute plus. Then we'll get on with the show. And also greeting us, we're reuniting with Rambam student, teacher, and activist, the dissemination teachings of the Nesher Godo, whose teachings we have to share today, Dennis Ryan, who had a brief vacation in South America, and he'll be talking about the differences between North and South America, the cultural similarities, and the cultural nuances that are unique to the part of South America that he was in. We have another 40 seconds to just listen to this wonderful music by Yosef Kadorner. Okay, now we're going to bring on our co-host, Dennis Ryan. Good morning, Dennis. Hasta la mañana. Slava Boga. Baruch Hashem. God bless you and your entire family.
Thank you. And may God bless everybody.
Amen. Dennis, before we go further, and you're talking about experiences in South America, I'd like just to remind our our crowd, our international listeners. Also, we're doing this live on TikTok, Dennis. They can see me, but they can't see you, but they certainly can hear your golden voice. We've reached a milestone, blessed human souls. The current world population is now 8,100,000,000 and over 600,000 people. The amount of people that have been born today is almost 170,000. The amount of people who have gone to the next level of life is almost 77,000. So we see the social engineering designs are failing. Those who call themselves eugenicists, they should pack up and retire. It's about time to realize the Creator is running the show. And that being said, in terms of our listening audience, we continue to have the United States being the dominant listener to our program, which we give thanks for that, followed by Australia at 4.84%, America's at 84.68%, followed by Parlez-vous Francais, 2.42%, Du sprechen der Deutsch, Germany at 1.61%, followed by Argentina at 1.61%. I don't speak Portuguese or Spanish. I just know a word here and a word there. So, Dennis, now that we've got some sort of context upon where we're broadcasting, who we're broadcasting to, can you tell our blessed audience now listening on live on TikTok your experiences going down to South America for, it was like a month plus? Because our last time we did a show was on January 14th, so it's about 2.5 months since we last did a program. Give us a couple minutes description of your experiences down in South America, the similarities and the differences.
Well, when it comes to the differences, it's not too much, because most of the Judaic people blend in with everybody else. They don't go around actually advertising anything about Judaism. They just go in and do their work and look and feel and act like everybody else, but they do have different observances. But those observances are not what we call showcasing anything. They do it very quietly, subtly, so that it blends in, stands out in any way, shape, or form. I guess I've learned this ever since the migration from Spain, where the people there used to be prosecuted underneath all sorts of rules and regulations. So what happens is, when they finally got away from Spain and ended up in South America, they said, whoa, we're not going to do this again. So they were much smarter, and they worked out much quieter, and you wouldn't even know there's a strong Jewish population in any of the countries in South America.
Mm-hmm. But what about the individuals who are, you know, the Bnei Noach, the Gentiles, how are they, I mean, where you were, are they similar to, say, how people are in America? Do they have a different sense of values? Are they more home family? You know, unfortunately, America is going through a very big crisis, a family crisis, where a lot of one-family houses have been raised up, and a lot of parents are working one or two jobs. They don't spend enough time with the children. What's going on from your observations in that part of South America you were in?
Well, you got to remember there's a lot of history in South America, and it's not good history. It really was supervision and imposition by European ideas. So what happens is slavery went on for a good 200 years. I was in the city of Cartagena, Colombia, for 2 months, and those people still feel the concept of slavery that was imposed by the European concepts, so that they don't want to repeat it. They don't want to even talk about it because it's somewhat painful. So they realize that they are the leftovers or the remnants of a long period that was imposed by European concepts. So they are trying to find themselves and see where they are. An example of that was I was flipping the stations on the TV channel, and there were three young guys, all in my shirts, playing guitars and playing Spanish music, which was nice. But you could tell it wasn't their natural language, but they were trying very hard. But in between songs, they would flitter away on their guitars, at the bottom of their guitars, and they would like break out into little rhythms. And it wasn't until after watching them for about 5 or 10 minutes did I realize what the rhythms were.
Mm-hmm.
It was klezmer music.
Wow.
So here they are on national TV playing Spanish songs, singing Spanish words, but in between they were tickling the bottom of their guitars with klezmer music. That was astounding. And when they were done for about half a minute, they all looked at each other and laughed. So,
it's funny that I remember. Yes, go ahead, Dennis.
Go ahead, Don. You remember?
No, you might have seen this. I was way too young, but I've seen a video of it. Sid Caesar had a comedy series called Show of Shows. Do you remember it?
Absolutely.
So there was one skit, I think, like Mel Brooks, Sid Caesar, and maybe Rob Weiner, the father of Rob Weiner, who played Michael in All in the Family. They dressed up as American Indians, and their dialogue, you know, no one could understand because their dialogue was in Yiddish, and they were making Yiddish jokes. Or dressed up as American Indians. So it's kind of like something like that.
Well, you mentioned Indians. We realized in North America that they were the original people that we displaced to a certain extent.
Yes.
But they don't recognize Indians in South and Central America that much because most of them were put into slavery. So that there's no real strong Indian concept. Throughout the Caribbean, they call them Cacique Indians.
Mm-hmm.
They emanated from Venezuela, Colombia, but the Spanish took care of them so that they smothered them to the point that, that there's only ghost stories left. In other words, as people don't want to talk about those hard times of slavery. And that went on for almost 200 years, maybe more than 250 years in South America. And the Spanish and the Portuguese did the same thing, and that has made sure that the local people had no say in anything. And what has happened, the difference between North and South America is that we in North America said to the indentured servants, come to America, work out, we used to have contracts, work out your repayment for the transportation to America, and if you stay, we will give you land. And we used to give out 50 acres. So we made the people who remained and slaves, regardless of their color, we told them that they could own land. So when we had a fight against the British, these people were fighting for their land. But in South America, the Europeans made sure that only the rich people own the land. Slaves and other poor people were not allowed to own the land. And that tradition is still holding true for today. So they haven't really changed that, even though a fellow by the name of Simon Bolivar came along and said, let's change everything. Well, he was successful on a military basis, but on a political basis, it was a bust. And the poor people of South America are still poor people of today. That hasn't changed much. And without owning any land, what are they going to do? Beholden to the boss who hires them for a job? Maybe, maybe not. But apparently, they've settled in with this, but they haven't been able to change their political system. While even though we have a lot of people who don't like our political system, think that we're not fair to everybody. The one in South America doesn't even exist. So we can tell those people who are suffering in this country, you're suffering, and you had a big change. We recognize that you could have a chance to own land, which was never given to anybody in South or Central America.
So
strange but true.
Right. So you're basically giving the impression that on a subconscious and conscious level, there's some sort of spirit of intimidation which permeates into the society in the country you're in, which is very painful because I know, although they've suffered tremendously, the indigenous people of North America, as I like to call Turtle Island, because I heard an indigenous person say, this is, we call it Turtle Island, you might call it the United States of America, still their voices are being heard and through mass communications and, you know, cyberspace, they can really air their gripes and hopefully eventually, you know, they claim that a lot of treaties that were made with the American government were broken by the American government. Perhaps one of the keys to the development of this country as a more equitable place, more diversion and more equality, more inclusiveness, is to honor the treaties that were made with the indigenous people. But that, you know, I'm not an expert on this. I'm just giving my man on the street's viewpoint. I want to go into something a little bit more positive now, Dennis, because I know that a lot of people are looking at the events in the Middle East or in Russia and the Ukraine and other events going around the world, or in Syria and North Africa, South Africa, as being signs of the end times, which, okay, fine. Want to argue that? You can argue it. But I want to share some prophecies after the confusion and the delusion and the illusion has been lifted from the minds of 8,100,000,000 people. Talk about a type of prophecy that we have from the Israelite tradition, coming from the book of Ezekiel that talks about, in chapter 47, verse 12, connected to the rebuilding of the third and eternal temple, that on the banks of the river, there will be banks and all types of fruits and bearing trees will crop up, grown in a very efficient way. Now, I've been to Jerusalem, Yerushalayim, many times, and aside from maybe private gardens and maybe an olive tree here or there, very few vegetation, much vegetation is growing. Again, aside in private properties, I haven't seen farms or you know, there was once at one time, historically speaking, there was a forest that surrounded the Holy Mountain. But that what happened was that the Jews in those times were rebelling against the Roman colonialists, the conquerors, the invaders. They used to go out and do reconnaissance missions to spread messages to the Jews living in northern Judea, southern Judea, because then it was called Judea. It wasn't called Palestine, it was called Judea. And what the Romans cut down, so basically what you see is a lot of barrenness, and it's very interesting how the city developed right at, you know, the modern city in the last, say, 1700 years, that's, you know, we call it modern after the destruction of the Second Temple, that you don't see too much forestry. However, in the future, I'm going to read now the prophecy of Ezekiel. All kinds of trees for food will grow up on both banks of the stream, because the stream will come out from a certain place within the Holy Temple, the Third Temple, and their leaves will not wither nor their fruit end. They will yield new fruit every month. Their fruit will serve for food and their leaves for healing. Again, blessed souls, if you want to learn more about it, go to chapter 47, verse 12 in the book of Ezekiel. And I don't know if the FDA is going to approve leaves for healing, but these are prophetic teachings which we're not ashamed to share. So the Midrash teaches that in addition to these fruits yielding fruit every month, they always produce different kinds of fruit. So what is the meaning they will yield new fruit every month? That every tree will bear a new species of fruit every month. The produce of one month will not be similar to the next. And that's in the Midbar Rabbah. And next week, hopefully, Dennis will continue with this teaching, because there's a lot of nuances, a lot of interdimensional matters to be discussed here. But people just think the creation is as they see it. And just as an example, some will answer, well, isn't there written a teaching that there's nothing new under the sun? And that's in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 9. But actually, there's a fruit that continues to grow. It's called the caper bush, which you can go to any fruit store, carry it. Sometimes they're jarred, sometimes they're sold, you know, unpacked. that produces its food over an extended time. So every day, new food are available from the caper bush. So Dennis, your take on this, on how switching the dialogue from talking about mass destruction and the world being decimated right before the coming of the Messiah, that after the coming of the Messiah, in the fullest sense, that all of us will acknowledge, whether it be Jew, Muslim, or Christian, I know today is a holiday in the Christian calendar, that we shall see changes in the creation, but changes that already have taken place thousands of years ago, which will show us that nothing really is new under the sun, yet we're going to see new things. How do we deal with this paradox?
Well, to me, it's not really a paradox, because the old saying that our Creator provides, if He didn't provide, why would our population increase all over the world? People are always complaining they don't get enough food. Yet, how many people die each year because of starvation? There may be some people that happen, but God does provide. I mean, you even take the Palestinians. They thought they had no way of getting any food. Yet we airdropped and airdropped and airdropped food and provisions for them. It doesn't mean they're all going to live, but God does provide. And He helps those who are the providers. We have learned to feed off the earth. The earth is feeding a lot of human beings, and it's going to be more, so we don't know. Okay. Don, I have to interrupt what I'm doing here. Sorry.
Okay. No problem. So should I put you on hold or what?
No, it's okay now. Thank
okay.
you. But anyway, God provides. People think we're all going to die. Thousands of years ago, we had people who were scientists or pretended to be scientists agreed that there wasn't enough food to keep everybody fed. Well, there was even a famous Irish or English solution that the Catholics were expanding like rabbits and creating all sorts of babies everywhere, that maybe they should use them as a source of food. It sounds horrendous, but this was proven and books were written about it, and everybody called it the Irish solution. If you had so many people on a little island, how could you feed them all? Well, they thought cannibalism was a good idea, but they didn't realize God provides. Humans do not. How the world is run and how much the earth gives up for food and it's available is God's business.
Right. Who is saying
some
that?
Some places, that was the English that was saying that?
Who were the people oppressing the Irish Catholics in those days?
Those were the English. And a famous guy by the name of Malthus, who wrote a lot of scientific philosophy, which science wasn't even founded then, but he came up with the thing called the Irish solution. That was a rallying cry for England that they didn't have to take care of the Irish because the Irish should take care of themselves. Ironic. But
what were the essential differences that led to conflict or the reason for England to dominate over the Irish? Theological or political or just a land grab type of thing?
I think it was both. The fear was that the Irish were multiplying at a faster rate and the English felt like they would be run over by too many Irish people, or that there was no control on the Irish population. So they said that rather than share their problems of having food and using English food, that they should solve their own problem. A harsh way and a sad way of looking at things, but the English at that time said, it's good enough for the Irish. Now, I'm not casting aspersions on English or anything like that, because these were politically motivated solutions. And when you let politicians decide on what the solution is, a lot of people get hurt and are injured and die. So that's another reason why people should be more mindful of religion than politics. Yet, some people want to talk about politics rather than religion. God has always been with us. Politics is like the wind. It blows this way, it blows that way. The reason? We don't know. God has been a steady belief for everybody. We must have more faith in him.
I think some people, I'm not saying a percentage, that they've traded their faith and put their faith into political machinery, you know, the machinations of those who want
well,
to socially near
they
us.
Believe,
they
believe there's hope there, and that's what politicians sell, the future hope. And what do? They make promises. And some people think you can eat promises. Some people think you can sit down at the table and have a nice dinner on promises. It doesn't exist. You're only fooling it. If you can't understand what reality is, what God has given us, and all the fruits of the earth are still there. Earth hasn't disappeared. God is still there. Promises come and go every minute, every hour, every week, every month, every year. And what happens when promises are not fulfilled? Well, they have another group that comes through with new promises. And there's some people that will go through life thinking that promises will come true. That's what Disney basically sells.
Okay, I'd like to move on to, it's basically a portion of the oral Torah tradition of Israel that in the Zohar, which is the basically the base of the spinal cord of the transmission of the inner dimension of Torah, which identifies Pirkei Avos, so it's also known as Ethics of the Father, which I would encourage any human being, whoever you may be, to discuss these matters of ethics and piety as instructed to us by the teachings in Pirkei Avos, Ethics of the Father, and to sweeten the teachings. We're going to take hopefully one teaching a week and integrate in the Nesher Gadol, the Rambam, Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, Maimonides, his commentary. And, of course, we'll look forward to Dennis's feedback, comments, questions, concerns about how Rambam understood this. First, this is chapter one. There are six chapters, so we're going to start with the first one. Just one short teaching. It goes like this. In terms of the tradition of the reception of the Torah, which people otherwise know as the Bible, I don't like to call it the Old Testament because there's nothing old about it. It's just a continual testimony and instruction of how the Creator has embedded in creation a plan for the creation for each and every nation, this generation, soulful revelations. It goes like this. Moses received the Torah from Sinai and passed it on to Joshua. Joshua passed it on to the elders to the prophets, and the prophets passed it on to the men of the Great Assembly. And the men of the Great Assembly was the last great mass of prophets. This was Mordechai, Daniel, Zechariah, Ezra, who led the nation back to make a returning to the land of Israel after the destruction of the first temple. And they, the men of the Great Assembly, made three statements. So we're going to bring in Rambam's commentaries on this Mishnah in a few moments. So the men of the Great Assembly made three statements. Be deliberate in judgment, raise up many students, and make a fence around the Torah. So here we go. This is Rambam, Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, Maimonides' instructions, elucidations on this piece of what is known as Milta Chidusa, words of Chassidus, but it's normally understood as ethical teachings. So, in the introduction to this text, meaning Rambam talking in his Mishnah Torah, we already explained the order of the oral tradition, how was it transmitted. Therefore, Rambam continued, my intent in these notes will be merely to explain these ethical statements to encourage the acquisition of these qualities, for they are of great value. We'll also elaborate an admonishment about certain negative traits, for they cause great loss. On other occasions, I will explain the meanings of the words and some of the concepts. So, Now going to where the men of the Great Assembly, also known as the Anshe Knesset Gedola, said three statements. One of them was be liberate in judgment. So this is very important. Even if you're not a judge, and I'm looking forward to Dennis's take on this, judges should be patient in coming to a decision and should not hastily issue a ruling without contemplating it in depth. It is possible that they will later will realize concepts that were not apparent to them in their original conception of the matter. And finally, to make offense on the Torah, to institute decrees and ordinances that will separate a person from sin. As God said in Leviticus chapter 18, verse 30, and you shall observe my ordinances, which was interpreted by our sages to mean, which is quoted in the Talmudic tractate of Moed Katan, which talks about how does one conduct oneself in the intermediate days of following the beginning of Sukkot, the Festival of Tabernacles, and Pesach, which is coming up, and you shall observe my ordinances, which was interpreted by our sages to mean, make it safeguard for my ordinances. Now, before Dennis speaks, I just want to mention that people might say, well, why did the rabbis come and make statutes? Well, it's like this. You buy a lot, like I have, this program is being broadcast through my laptop in my house, thank God, and there are various instructions how to work this computer. But at the same time, too, there are warnings, a fence to protect the integrity and the functionality of this computer by saying, don't make sure there's no liquids that spill on the keyboard. Because if liquids spill on the keyboard, and I've had it happen to me, I once damaged and destroyed one of my laptops because a cup of tea or water fell on my keyboard. So these are the type of things that there have to be certain safeguards. And even with the most pristine teachings, because the pristine teachings, as holy and as truthful they are going to we, mere flesh and blood, teeny, tiny, minded human beings who make a lot of mistakes. So it's not that the Torah is impossible to keep, it's rather possible to keep, but as the generations go down in the succession, going back to 3,336 years since the original transmission of what is called as the Ten Commandments, there have been enactments and decrees made by the sages of all ages of the Israelite Jewish people to make sure we can keep to the best of our ability these commandments. I'll give one quick example. The original tithing was not with money, it was with agricultural produce because they lived in an agriculturally based society. You also can give tithe, they also had coinage, they had currency in ancient Israel, but the essential tithing was off your agricultural produce. And therefore, people were first commanded on how to give tithing, tithe, and then when the Jews living in the land, or when they went to the diaspora, now the primary form of tithing is through actual currency. So Dennis, your take on these matters.
Well, I think most people don't understand the word ethics. What we're talking about is principles, and that's principles of living, and they're positive type of principles. And these are principles that we hope and pray that people will follow as opposed to being stupid. Now, if you're stupid, we're not saying you were born that way. When you were born, God gave you a clear and beautiful mind imposed only with genes and other thoughts that were given to you by your parents. But as we grow older, we are not perfect. We don't pretend to be perfect, but we can't be stupid. You to live too long if you do all the wrong things. So we came up with this concept of ethics, things that you should keep in mind and follow through your lifetime. Why? Because they will keep you safe and keep you on the right side of what the future brings. You must always be thinking about certain principles that you are living by. Do you want to be a good person? Of course you want to be a good person. Who wants to be a bad person? Well, I guess bad people want to be bad. It's okay. That's their choice. But if you want to be good, there's certain principles you have to follow. And those are things that we basically call ethics. Ethics are there to remind you that you're not perfect. So therefore, we have to be careful that we don't step on the wrong thing when we're walking on a street. Now, some people, when we were growing up as kids, would say, don't step on the crack in the concrete. Don't step on any cracks because it's bad luck. Ethics has nothing to do with luck. Ethics has to do with your behavior. And you must be good, or at least try to be good. If you're not trying, then everything collapses, and humanity is forgotten, and it will disappear with the dust and the wind. So our forefathers believed that there's certain principles that we must follow. It isn't a question of choice. They have said that there's certain things that we know are good. So why would we attempt to be bad if we have a principle that shows us where the good is? So our main concept is stay away from bad or evil things. You do not step into something that you don't know where you're going to land with your foot. If there's a dark hole there, are you going to step into a dark hole? No. Your senses automatically tell you, no, no, no. If you don't know how deep the hole is, why would you want to step into it? So what we do is we say, take the correct path where you don't endanger yourself. And you do that by following certain principles. Now, these principles are wide-reaching and therefore a lifetime. You cannot just discard them, because to do so is to say that you want to accept something that is not good. I'm not defining good, and I'm not asking you to define it, but we all know the difference between good and bad. But we have to be reminded throughout our lives the difference between good and bad. If you tell a lie, is that good? That's for you to decide. How many lies can you tell? Can you live your whole life telling lies? Some people say, well, we have little white lies. A lie is a lie is a lie. You are only fooling yourself if you think you can color the lie. The lie says, were you telling the truth? Were you good? Truth is good, and good is truth. You must remember there is a connection, and we cannot forget it just because we're at different ages or in different circumstances. So ethics are the principles that we live by, and what we must have them always in our mind, whether we're youngsters, which happens. But then again, you got to grow up a little bit before you can understand the language, the meaning of words, and the full understanding of good and bad. So once you learn that, you cannot go back. You cannot go back and say, well, I didn't learn it properly. I didn't know what it was, but I kept believing in it. No. You have a conscience. If you do something wrong, your conscience will alert you. If you accept it, then you're accepting something that's not good. But that's your choice. Why have bad choices when there are so many good choices? God loves you. God is always there. And God will always be with you. And no matter what you do, he will always be able to accept you with a big welcome back. Now, the principles that we talk about that are good are basically principles that say you are not really stupid, even though you make mistakes. We all make mistakes, but we don't willfully make mistakes. So you must remember that the list of ethics or principles is paramount for you to have a clear conscience and to understand if you want to live a good life. It's your life, your choice.
Beautiful, Dennis. Now, also this segues perfectly into what the main portion of today's presentation. We have about 15 minutes to go. The proverb of Solomon was to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. So, and a wise man who is not fool or stupid, he's going to grow wiser. So many times because of environmental situations, people have been, I would like to use the term, instead of stupid, have been stupefied with the intent of those who are socially engineering society not to encourage active one-dimensional, two-dimensional, three-dimensional, four-dimensional, five-dimensional, six-dimensional, exponential type of thinking associated with, say, like the quantum physics, you know, perceptions and consciousness. We're now going to go to where we left off. I mean, the last time Dennis and I did a live program was January 14th, 2024. So 2.5 months later, we're continuing. And by the way, in the interim period, I did several shows on meditation, which anyone who's interested can hear it. And also, last week we read from a teaching from the Sixth Law of Trevor, 1941, about his perceptions of the Purim holiday, which was last Sunday. Reading the Book of Esther, anyone who has the free time, please check out those 9 chapters. There's no mention of God, but it was because the Jews attached themselves to godliness that we have a great victory of the wicked Amalekite, Haman. And with that being said, here we go in Mishlei, Proverbs chapter 3, verse 18. I just want to mention, too, the inspiration for this presentation, this is our 30th presentation on the Book of Proverbs, is based on the Lubavitcher Rebbe, may his merits protect us, advising then former mayor John Lindsay, who was teaching in a Sunday school, a Christian school, to start integrating the teachings of Mishlei Proverbs, which is a book about how to attain wisdom and how to stay away from folly and how to be ethical. So here we go, chapter 3, verse 18, talking about the Torah, which is a divine teaching, which, okay, you can dice and slice it you want to believe in your Quran, you want to believe in your New Testament, fine, or whatever the teachings of Buddha, whatever your faith is, but hopefully you're looking at your teachings, your source of nourishment, spiritual nourishment, in this way that we look at our Torah. It is a tree for those who grasp it, and those who draw near it are fortunate. So Matsuda David said that it's not just about getting close to it, it's those who support its observance with safeguards. And we talked about safeguards before from the men of the Great Assembly. So Dennis, for those who want to support this, meaning before they put it down or criticize, they might actually want to assist others learning Torah. Or let's be more universal. I would say a good Christian or a good Muslim or a good Hindu or someone who is not just imbibed of those teachings themselves, but they want to share it because they feel just like a candle can light many other candles and not diminish its light, so too, if you've been enlivened, if your consciousness has been uplifted, again, we, the Nation of Israel, talk about Torah, other faiths talk about their books or their traditions, oral, it can be oral traditions that are not written down, which are kept hopefully very, in a very accurate fashion. But, you know, I just want to quote that Rabbi Judah the Prince, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, had committed down oral Torah traditions because he saw that the exile would get tough after the destruction of the Second Temple, which already transpired even before he was born. And therefore, by writing it down, there would be a continuous link to this day of us talking about things in the Nation of Israel that I talked about 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago. But Dennis, your idea that those who are supporting spirituality are indeed very fortunate human beings.
Well, most of us are fortunate. We don't realize it. Why? Because every religion has its own good book. We can't memorize all this stuff. We have to live by it. So we use the book as reference. What does the book say? What does the good book say? So we do have books that help us perform our daily duties. Before you mentioned the word dimensional, I think you left some of our listeners on a shelf somewhere. Not to say you weren't doing the right thing, Don. The word, as Don used, dimensional, really refers to excuses. How many excuses can you live with? Can your conscience take unlimited excuses? Where are you going to stop giving excuses? We're not perfect, we know it. But that's not an excuse to do things bad. We should find out ways to do better because it's in the good book. And that's why we have a good book to remind ourselves. We can't take care of everything and remind ourselves of every little thing. But there is good books to help us. And they were written by our ancestors with wisdom and knowledge. Stay away from stupid things. Now, I'm not saying that you are stupid if you do a stupid thing. The thing is not you. The thing is an action you take. But it's your choice. And you must remember that you are responsible for your choices. If you want to be bad, be bad. If you want to be good at your choice. It's a freedom that you have. Use it. Why? Because that's why the good books are there. So don't feel bad that you have to go to the library to find a good book. No, each religion has a good book that they follow as their principles of what they believe in. Interesting part is if you took all the good books and read them all, you would say, oh, they're repeating the same stuff in different words, different languages, and different viewpoints. No, all humans are made by one creator. He made us all equal to a certain extent. And that is, we have our choices to be made. And whether you're in this religion or that religion, you want to make a good choice because you're a good person who doesn't want to do anything stupid, foolish, or bad. We are not perfect, but we strive to follow the principles that we live for, and those principles in your mind. And that's why we have a conscience, that once you veer away from the good book, some thought in the back of your mind is going to say, did you really have to do that? Did you really want to do that? Did you really mean to hurt somebody? And there we come with the word sorry. I'm so, so sorry. When can we stop using the word sorry for an excuse? We make mistakes when we're not perfect. But we cannot live with our excuses. Excuses are a dimension that you don't need in your head. You have a conscience, and we live by what our conscience says. To remind us, we have good books. Good books were written, were not written for bad things. They're there to help you. They may not fit your exact situation, but their intention is very, very clear. So whether you're reading a Bible or something that is called a Bible, whatever the book is, think of the good things that they're telling you. And are you doing it? We must be reminded, regardless of what age we are, there's room to do good things, and you can do it.
Thank you, Dan. We're moving on to the next verse, which will be our final verse for today. Chapter 3, verse 19 in the book of Proverbs, Mishle. The Lord founded the earth with wisdom and established the heavens with discernment, which is very interesting because we know everything created with everything connected, I should say, to the Creator, has in it a lot of stuff. As you know, Carl Sagan, the late physicist, who said there's a lot of stuff, you know. But stuff, when it's unpacked, is the dimension, or not the excuse, but the realm of wisdom. And the heavens, King Solomon is allegorizing as a place of discernment. So when we go into the World Torah tradition, we look at the explanation of Malbim, that he teaches us that the earth resembles the foundation and the heavens the ceiling. Because if we have no earth, we as human beings will just be floating particles. We won't be, as we are currently constituted, we can't live outside of the earth, although there are extended periods they can live in a space station, and there's talking about moving to other planets. But in general, our foundation will always be, according to my humble opinion, will be the physical earth as our physical foundation. And the ceiling, you talk about the ceiling of opportunity, you talk about the ceiling meaning there's a limitation, but really God's heaven has a ceiling where there's no limitation. And therefore, because there's really no limitations, even in a set physical foundation, which is called the earth, the physical earth, and the depths really have a limitation, we see that there's a source of blessing and plenty for the world. But then just mentioned something about people starving. It's not about the amount of food that's being grown or not enough. It's about the distribution system that human beings are either socially engineering or misengineering, or in dystopian society that people suffer, as opposed to there being enough bounty for 8,100,000,000 people. Because if the Almighty is allowing the human growth rate to multiply 2 to 1 for every 2 people coming into this world as newborn sucklings and babes, one are going back up to the place where they originally came from, and rooted in the pool bank of souls, rooted in the divine wisdom of the Creator, there's enough. Therefore, Marvel wants us to consider, as strong as the foundation it might seem to be, because the earth can bear 8,100,000,000 people and millions, I don't know how many millions or billions of animal life there is, and who knows how much is in the ocean. I don't know if you can count it all, probably not. The earth still at the same time was created from nothing, aside from the fact that wisdom was used as a foundation of the earth. Now, of course, he's talking in platitudes, and people might disagree. What about understanding? What about knowledge? But the heavens were earth. The heavens were established, perfected with discernment. The facts and principles derived from the wisdom, and the depths symbolizing the divine providence were split with knowledge, as are the clouds which drip dew. So, Dennis, here we are talking about King Solomon saying, don't take the earth for granted. We walk on the earth. We develop the earth. Sometimes we destroy the parts of the earth with chemical pumping. But we should know all earth, as our foundation, has divine wisdom. The very ground that we tread upon is hallowed ground because we are none other than the one who spoke and everything came into being. Your take on these matters.
Well, really what you're talking about is,
Dennis, I don't hear you clearly.
What you're really talking about.
Oh, Dennis, you're breaking up. Maybe your cell phone's charges or... Try to speak again. Dennis?
What you're really talking about is
humanity. Don't
hear
you clearly. Not coming clear. I can't hear you. If I can't hear you clearly, then our international audience can't hear you clearly either. If you have, I don't know what type of phone you're using, but you're going to have to project your voice or get closer to the speaker part of your telephone. Hello? Dennis?
Hello.
Try to call back in. We have a couple minutes to go.
Yes, I'm trying hard here.
Can't hear you, Dennis. I'm sorry. Boy, this is terrible. Murphy's Law, Don's Law kicked in. Just when we wanted to get a potent response from Dennis, we can't hear him audio-wise. So, Dennis, try one more time or try to call back in within the next 30 seconds.
Is this better?
Yeah, oh yeah, now I hear you.
Okay. What I was saying is, what Don was talking about is humanity. We're all humans, created us. He did a good thing by creating us. We are here. Some of our friends have passed away along the way, but that was expected. You can't live forever. But the one thing is, whether you go out into outer space and come back, your conscience is always with you. God has given us all a conscience. We cannot deny it. If you're walking on the earth or you're walking on a spaceship, your conscience is always working. So therefore, you must follow the ethics or rules of being good and all the principles associated with that. Why? Because we never lose our humanity. We are given that with our life. Our life and humanity are one and the same. And if you don't realize that, there is no change, and there is no big excuses for it. Excuses do not take the place of doing good things. They cannot replace good things. So we get back to the principles or ethics again that we cannot deny. government and all these other things are distractions. And those distractions are not good, because we must concentrate on what is good and are we doing good. If all humans did good, the world would be a better place. We must remind everybody, our neighbors, our friends, our relatives.
Again, I'm sorry. Listen, we'll have to pick up this conversation, God willing, next week. And I'll talk to you after the show. I don't know if you're using your cell phone. Maybe a landline usually is a more stronger, consistent transmission. So maybe this was unfortunate. We had a little technical difficulty receiving on my end the wisdom and the fellowshipping with Dennis Ryan, our Rambam activist and teacher, dispersion of the teachings of Rambam, the Nesher Godel, the Great Eagle, which we sampled a little bit today in talking in the Milad Chassidus, the words of Chassidus, ethical teachings from the Tractate of Perkei Avos, Ethics of Our Fathers. We're going to end off with today's program. I'm going to read the words in English because probably most people listening don't understand the Hebrew lyrics or the Lashon HaKodesh, whatever you want to dice and slice it. Yosef Kaduner, who had led off our show, is now going to be joined by another sweet singer, Ari Goldwag. They both live in the Holy Land. And they're going to be singing the following lyrics in Hebrew, not English. It goes like this, in Psalms 121. This, a song of ascent. I lift my eyes to the mountains. From where will my help come? My help will come from the Lord, maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot falter. Your guardian does not slumber. Indeed, the guardian of Israel neither slumbers nor sleeps. The Lord is your guardian. The Lord is your protective shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will guard you from all evil. He will guard your soul. The Lord will guard your going and coming from now and for all time. And that's an eternal promise coming from the eternal Creator, which was transmitted through the prophecy of prophetic Psalm of 121. And here, about 2,800 years later, here's two young men singing this prophetic words of the sweet singer of Israel, Nam Zmirat Yisrael, King David, David HaMelech. And hopefully in a way that everyone will understand that we of Israel are promoting Ahava Chad, one love. Goral Chad, one destiny. Kolon of all. Badach Achi Shalom. Don't be disappointed that you've been anointed with a Selam Elohim, with a divine image, scrimmage, and live and to walk upon this hallowed earth in a way that we eventually will get to see what life is really worth under the guidance of the King of Israel, the Melech HaMashiach, the King Messiah, who roared out Torah Chadash Min Tetzeh, who roared out new dimensions of Torah, which is never revealed even to the greatest prophets of Moses and Isaiah and Samuel and Zechariah. Here we go. Shir Malos, a song of ascent. Let's all ascend to the next level in a peaceful, pleasant way. Take care, everyone. Shamayim.